Welcome. In today's episode, we have a conversation with Parker Lewis, author and educator in the Bitcoin space, head of business development at Zaprite, and we get into why Parker believes that Bitcoin is the solution to inflation and how Zaprite is providing a seamless optionality for accepting Bitcoin payments. We hope you enjoy. Yeah, so welcome, Parker. We're excited to have you on as an early guest here at the Build with Bitcoin podcast. We're focusing on an array of different companies and investors in the space, so maybe we'll get right into it. So we'd love to hear a little bit more about you, and of course, the focus will be what you're doing with facilitating Bitcoin payments, right, for businesses and individuals, but. That being said, before Zaprite, I'm sure there was, just like any of us, a whole series of events that took you to where you are today. So I think it'd be great to start with, you know, who you are, what got you to where you are, and maybe specifically that part in your life that you started focusing on Bitcoin.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you guys for having me. It's an honor. I saw Lynn here in Austin a couple of weeks ago at the Bitcoin Takeover at the Commons, and she mentioned that you guys were launching this, and so honored to be one of your early guests. So thanks for having me. And yeah, so everyone does have their own unique story. I'll give you guys my kind of condensed version, but my background is in traditional financial services. So started out on Wall Street in investment banking. That took me to restructuring. Then I worked at a hedge fund for a long time in Dallas, Texas, and that's really where I went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. I really came at it for a perspective, or the way I would describe it is I was never dismissive of Bitcoin, but skeptical about it for a long time. And I really had to first come to form an understanding of some of the problems with the legacy system before I could really start to see Bitcoin, because I think it's difficult to understand Bitcoin in a vacuum, and it's near impossible to understand Bitcoin if you're not looking at it through the right lens, or through the lens of what is, in many people's view, particularly my own, a broken financial system and a broken monetary system. And so I'd gone down the Bitcoin rabbit hole in 2016, kind of independently from that research of Bitcoin. I was trying to understand what would happen when the Federal Reserve would unwind its balance sheet. And that was when I came to the conclusion, in terms of unwinding its post-financial crisis quantitative easing, or all the slush of dollars it put in the system to, quote, save it. That led down to a path of figuring out that they were always going to have to print more money, and that was a problem. And then at the same time, I was starting to do research on Bitcoin and kind of figured out the fundamental signal, and decided at that point in time, it had turned to the calendar of 2017, that my time would be better spent not in front of a Bloomberg screen, but working on Bitcoin. I developed conviction and a framework to understand why Bitcoin would emerge as the global reserve currency. And I thought that the most important thing I could do with my time would be to work on Bitcoin, and specifically building infrastructure for Bitcoin to make it a greater utility and to make it more secure. And so I kind of started to see why Bitcoin was a better form of money. And at that point in time, I looked at the problem of, if Bitcoin is money, then the most important first service to that is custody. And ended up joining a company called Unchained in 2018. I was head of business development there for 4 years. Unchained is a custody and financial services business, but it doesn't operate like an existing bank. It really focuses on eliminating counterparty risk and helping people hold Bitcoin directly, such that they do not bear the risk of a third party lending their money out or losing it for whatever reason. Did that for a number of years, helped build Unchained from a very early stage to a Series B funded company. Decided to step back from that in 2017 to work on a book. I had, through that process, written a series called Gradually Then Suddenly. And so during the course of last year, turned that into a book, which I launched in December of this past year, in December 2023. So I've been out there selling it. And through that period of time, when I had stepped back from Unchained and working on my book, a number of things happened, which we can discuss. One of the kind of market events that happened was a series of bank failures in the United States. And that really sharpened my pencil of thinking about what I would work on next. And that's really when the idea of Bitcoin payments, which wasn't a new idea, but in my own mind, made it a greater urgency that that while Bitcoin is a store of value, a big part of the reason why it stores value is because it's a better form of money. And key to that is the ability to exchange it directly for goods and services. So through the process of finishing up my book, I'd started to focus on Bitcoin payments. And that's ultimately what led me to the company that I'm currently working on and building called Zaprite, which is focused on Bitcoin payments, as you mentioned. So happy to go into greater detail wherever you guys might want. But that's my short story to Bitcoin, which is a little bit more long-winded than I wanted it to be.
In addition to your work at Unchained, at the same time, you helped launch the Bitcoin Commons in Austin, which is known as an entrepreneurial hub and a co-working space that really brings Bitcoiners together. So you've not only worked in a startup yourself, but you've also really kind of helped incubate or be part of or be involved with a number of the startups in the Austin scene, which is one of the strongest scenes for Bitcoin startups that, you know, that we have. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement there too?
Yeah, and that was also something that I would say came to be very organically. We started hosting the Austin BitDevs meetup in Austin soon after I joined Unchained at our office. And over the course of a few years, more and more developers moved to Austin. Many were already here. I really attribute it to the fact that Austin was another emerging tech center within the United States. And when Bitcoin came onto the scene in 2009, Austin, in my view, really was always going to be a logical home for Bitcoin development because Austin being a tech center, part because of Texas being a business-friendly state, part because of Texas being so freedom-minded, and that the more you start to understand Bitcoin and its connection to really it being an agent, in my view, of what sound money is, being a very freeing agent or an agent of freedom, more than just money in terms of what it allows for each individual who saves in it, that this kind of emerging scene of Austin being a development hub was the early tea leaves were already there. And then with BitDevs, it just started growing and growing and growing. And as Unchained was growing, we needed to move to a new office. And BitDevs had become very important. And for those of you who aren't familiar, the audience that aren't familiar with BitDevs, it's a highly technical discussion that is meant to draw in debate from all sides in terms of what is currently being worked on in Bitcoin, both on at the protocol level as well as the application level. And then as that kind of grew and grew and outgrew our space, we were looking for a new office, and there was a space that we found that we liked, but we really wanted to preserve BitDevs for the Austin Bitcoin community and because it was strategic to what we were building at Unchained. And that was really what spawned the Bitcoin Commons. And so what BitDevs was, a meetup once a month that brought the community together to talk about all of these technical topics in Bitcoin. And the vision that we set out for the Commons was, wouldn't it be nice to, and wouldn't it be productive to have a forum like this that wasn't just once a month, but that could afford a space for a bunch of Bitcoin companies that are early and in that startup stage, or really, if you're thinking from an investor's perspective, the little ground floor, the equivalent of the old garage, that could allow a bunch of very talented people to be in one room. And that if you put a bunch of talented people in one room, that the high degrees of randomness will result in very good things. And so that was really what spawned the idea of the Commons. And so now what it is, it's a co-working space during the day and an event space either around larger events that might be going on in Austin, around South by Southwest or ACL or F1. But then we also have several monthly meetups that happen here. So rather than just one BitDevs, we'll we'll tear down the co-working space and turn it into an event space to bring the Bitcoin community here. And there's always just so many people traveling through Austin, given it is a tech center. So it started out with a meetup with three people that grew, and then that launched us into to expand on the vision. And I think it's something that has been valuable for all the people that participate, not just the people who co-work out of here, but people that come to the events, because the more people that share common values, that are minded to work on Bitcoin and help develop value within the Bitcoin ecosystem, you really do need those community spaces to bring people together in real life, because there's just connections and work that you can't get done in productivity that you lose just by being on a screen.
Absolutely. Community development is a key part. I mean, so it sounds like you've gotten involved. You kind of went full in with Bitcoin, Parker. I mean, I'm hearing you talk about, you know, you got involved with your community, with Bitcoin Commons. You've written a book. You've gotten involved on the custody side. Now you're getting into the payment side. So maybe before we get into a little more of that, I'm curious, you mentioned earlier that you had heard of Bitcoin and you were initially skeptical, right, when you were working in traditional finance. And I think it's something that many of us and many of the listeners can relate to, either in the past or actively. Can you touch a little bit on what got you from that skepticism to just going really full into the space and believing so wholeheartedly in what Bitcoin is doing and the problem it's solving?
Yeah, the short answer is I had good friends that helped steer me in the right direction and helped educate me about Bitcoin to help distill what is a lot of noise into being able to see and find the signal. And so the longer answer of that is that at the same time that I was working at a hedge fund and researching all of the things that happened in and around the financial crisis to inform what would happen when the Federal Reserve tried to unwind the impact of quantitative easing, I got sent to do diligence on a company in Canada. And through that process, I got introduced to Safety Namoose, who ultimately wrote a book called The Bitcoin Standard. And that, and I like to think that, you know, when I say that I was skeptical but not dismissive, it's that from a investing perspective, or just from my own personality perspective, I'm hyper conservative, which is, you know, to somebody on the outside looking into Bitcoin, this looks like the exact opposite. Basically, being fully, you know, writing a book about Bitcoin, working on multiple Bitcoin startups, having virtually all of my savings in Bitcoin. I don't own stocks or bonds. I only own equity in companies that I've helped run, and that seems the opposite of someone who is otherwise conservative. But in my perspective, it's the most conservative position I could take. And that the thing that really helped open my eye was, on the one side, figuring out that the current system was, in my view, broken beyond repair. And then on the other side, I had to first ask the question of myself, which I think everybody has to ask the question of themselves in order to see Bitcoin, which is, what is money? Because it's always for most people, it's either never worked, or for other people, it's just always worked. And as a result, it's been taken for granted. And while people have evaluated this career path or that career path, or I'm going to invest the money that I have saved in this stock or that stock or this bond or in real estate, if everyone approaches the problem with a little bit of humility, they will recognize that they were never taught growing up what makes something money or not. And so Saif Namoose, when I got a chance to meet him, he had not yet written the Bitcoin Standard, but he was well-schooled in monetary economics. Obviously, he had to be to write what I view as the greatest book that is out there on Bitcoin. And I hope my own will be a perfect complement to it and similarly add value. But he helped me understand that question of, what is money? What caused different goods to emerge as money, which is very different than making money. And then on the other side, I read a book called Mastering Bitcoin, which really helped me understand how. Bitcoin works. And you really have to be able to put those two things together, which I also try to do in a very efficient way with my book, Gradually Then Suddenly. But it was really those three things. Understanding that the why behind the legacy system is broken, that they're always going to have to print more money. Understanding that question, what is money? What has caused things to emerge as money? How do those properties translate and do they exist in Bitcoin? But then to really be reinforced with the why, you have to know how Bitcoin works. And so I went down that path, started to understand more from a technical level how everything is held together, why it is credible. And when those two things came together, that's when I realized, okay, I understand how this works. I understand why it exists. And I understand the problem it is solving, because most people also, from the outside looking in, look at Bitcoin as a solution in search of a problem. Mm-hmm. And so those things clicked for me, and I realized Bitcoin doesn't have to do anything else, really. It's already won. If you can get in and understand how it works and the why of its relevance. And so when that came together, it logically led me to the conclusion that the Bitcoin is a solution to the dollar or the euro or the yen or any other form of money that exists. And that it was also anchored in, if you start from the perspective of the legacy system's broken, we have to move on to something that's better. And that it's not just a hope strategy, it's that Bitcoin was already working at the time. The path was there. And the thing that would be best spent for my time, the most conservative position I could take, was saving in Bitcoin and working on Bitcoin to realize that future.
Parker, I really have appreciated your thought leadership in Bitcoin and your writings over the years, and was so happy to see it all compiled into your book, Gradually Then Suddenly. And one of the more recent writings that you've had was Bitcoin is Not a Hedge. And it talks about Bitcoin, as a foundational financial system. Today, in early 2024, as we're doing this interview, there's been so much conversation or maybe a debate about, is Bitcoin a store of value or a medium of exchange? And with the ETFs launching and so many traditional financial people now becoming more introduced or more familiar or invested in Bitcoin through the ETFs, it really feels that focus has been on it as a store of value, and the price has gone up. But your perspective is much broader than that. Can you speak a little bit to why you see this, the medium of exchange, as being so essential to how you think about Bitcoin, and that leads you into really what you're doing with Zapright too?
Yeah, so my perspective too, and kind of you mentioned the writing, and then I also did a presentation on Bitcoin is Not a Hedge, that the point that I helped draw out for people in that is that there are certain things that can hedge inflation, and that when you start to really understand Bitcoin and see the field, you realize that it's actually the solution, the permanent solution to inflation. And that certain things that are correlated, if we're talking in the case of the dollar, but really any fiat currency, if you're looking to hedge fiat inflation, you will typically invest in assets that are correlated to the dollar and correlated to the dollar inflation. That might be real estate. It might be, now people being pushed out to the fringes of investing in equity because they're trying to escape inflation. But real estate can't fix a problem with money. Equities can't fix a problem with money. Only a better form of money can solve the problem of a bad form of money. And all fiat forms of money are broken. And so when I describe why Bitcoin is not a hedge, it does preserve purchasing power in the face of inflation, but it's a lot more than that. That it provides a currency system that solves the problem once and for all. Anything that you're hedging inflation with, you have to convert back into the currency that is inflating to then buy goods and services. And the way that Bitcoin works, that isn't true. That it can be both fully functional as a long-term store of value, as well, Lynn, as you mentioned, I have a view that it can facilitate direct commerce as well. And my perspective on it is that they are really one in the same. And that if you think about, you know, if we think about Bitcoin in the context of being a long-term store of value, at one point you exchange your dollars for Bitcoin, and then you hold it over a period of time, and it stores value over that period of time, goes up in value, increases in purchasing power. In extreme ways today, because everyone is adopting Bitcoin for the first time, and Bitcoin is still owned on a relative basis and understood on a relative basis by very few people. But then at some other point in time, you're going to convert out of it, whether that's back into dollars or directly to goods and services. And so that process, you were using Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. You were just, there was just a long period of time between your two exchanges. And that Bitcoin's ability to store value is part and parcel because it is so easy to exchange. And just because today it is most easily exchangeable for dollars, the underlying properties that exist that allow it to be so easily exchanged for dollars are what also allow it to be so easily exchanged for goods and services. And so when you think about a basic example of, I'm a business, I'm taking dollars. Now, my business takes primarily Bitcoin, but we also take dollars. But if I've recognized why Bitcoin will store value better than dollars, I might accept dollars as how I'm selling my goods and services, sell those dollars for Bitcoin, and then holding Bitcoin on my balance sheet. But once I've figured out the equation of why Bitcoin will store value over time, if I have customers that are willing to pay me in Bitcoin, then I can eliminate an unnecessary step. Because rather than take fiat currency, sell the fiat currency to buy Bitcoin, I could just sell my goods and services directly for Bitcoin. And the reason, which might not be obvious to the uninitiated, is because the most beautiful thing about Bitcoin is that it pairs this property of scarcity, which is what allows it to store value, with the ability to transfer that scarce asset, that finitely scarce asset, there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin, over a communication channel. And so if someone is transferring their Bitcoin over a communication channel to buy and sell dollars, they can also, at a point of sale on an e-commerce store, attached to an invoice, also over the internet, receive Bitcoin for sale for that. So the short way I would kind of sum up your question, Lynn, is that the store of value and the medium of exchange are really, in my mind, if people kind of get to really see Bitcoin, they are the same thing. And then the context changes as, well, what are you exchanging Bitcoin for? Just Bitcoin and dollars? And what time horizons? Because typically when you first buy, you know, when you buy your first Bitcoin, you might not ever convert out of it, right? And so you're just thinking, well, I don't even know if it's possible to go on the internet and buy anything for Bitcoin. But as you start to understand the same reason that you can use that to go in and out of dollars, transfers perfectly. And when you start to think about the global shift that's underway, that people are figuring out, once they do figure out the Bitcoin stores value, then it becomes hyper logical to say, well, what's the most efficient way to get this? And what de-risks my business the most? Now, if you don't understand Bitcoin, you're not going to jump to the logical conclusion that you should sell your goods and services for Bitcoin directly. But on the other side of that coin, if you already have, it becomes hyper logical to say, hey, if I've got some customers willing to pay me in Bitcoin, I'd rather and be in a better position if I could just take Bitcoin directly than first converting to dollars or converting dollars to Bitcoin and incurring the high cost of the fiat system.
So, and if I'm hearing you correctly, Parker, that interesting. And I mean, simplifying it, what you're essentially saying is, if the function of money is to allow us to trade and commerce, then once I've recognized that Bitcoin is a better form of money, then jumping between two different types of money is more of a friction point. It's more of a cost barrier for me as an individual or as a business. So that's, I'm assuming, what led you to provide solutions through Zap, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, that is. And kind of a summary. Yeah, that's exactly right. And then a summary view of my, you know, outlook on the world is Bitcoin is a better form of money. 100% of people are going to have to adopt Bitcoin. Everyone gets to choose, but it is also no coincidence that people use one common currency to facilitate trade. It is inherent to the problem that, and the nature of the problem that money solves, which you know, Israel, aptly stated as solving this problem of trade. And so if 100% of the world is going to adopt Bitcoin as money for the reason that it has a fixed supply and it can't be debased, and the consequence of that is that it will best store value between a series of exchanges, then every person that also figures that out is also going to realize that they have a need to accept Bitcoin as payment because it's functionally the same calculus. Once they've figured out Bitcoin's a better form of money and it will store value better. And so what happened for me is I'm well immersed in Bitcoin. I've worked on a book on Bitcoin. I've worked on Bitcoin custody. When there were a series of bank failures in the United States last year, Silicon Valley Bank being, I believe, the largest, First Republic being the second largest, I believe they were two of the top five or two of the top six largest bank failures ever, and they happened functionally overnight. The first thing that people thought about was, and particularly for customers of those banks, but realistically, everybody in America, maybe most people that were paying attention in the world, was, how am I going to make payroll on Monday? Okay. And that is a very, what I would describe as a balance sheet problem. I've got savings and I've got people I need to pay come Monday morning. And if my bank isn't there, then how do I carry out the operations of my business? Well, that might be where the mind went first, but where my mind went was that bank is not just a rail to save your money, and it's a fragile one at that, but it's also how all those businesses receive revenue. So how their customers reach them. And that heightened for me I'd already come to the conclusion that Bitcoin was going to be used to facilitate direct commerce. But that series of bank failures heightened for me the need to say, hey, I should be spending my time, and I think more people should be spending their time and more capital should be devoted towards some urgency around building the rails to help Bitcoin accept payment, because the same problem that exists, which is a balance sheet one and a savings one of if your bank fails and your money's not there, that, well, you're also cut off if you don't have a second rail, a second currency as a rail to accept payment, then you're cut off from your customers too, in terms of how you could be paid. And so when you think about those things in tandem, you also start to see that they are one and the same. And that's really what set me down the path to say, you know, more urgency needs to be provided to this idea that Bitcoin payments, they might be early, but they aren't a niche and every business is going to need them. And if you start to figure out that your currency is a risk, your currency is a risk because it's being devalued, so you're losing your purchasing power. But if the currency is a risk, then the rails of that currency system are also a risk to you because it's your access to your customers. It's the way your customers pay you to get you money for your goods and services. And having that second rail, Bitcoin, is something that actually de-risks business. And so, yeah, that's what we're working on now.
Now, Zaprite had existed for a while before you joined it. And can you just explain, just kind of give an overview of, it's non-custodial, so it's super easy to set up. You can connect it to various platforms that you already have that you're working with, and just give a brief overview of how that functions and how that solves this problem.
So Zaprite, best way to think about it is it's a payment gateway. And the way that we think about the problem is that your first foray into Bitcoin, which not for everyone, I'm perfectly accepting that some people speculate in Bitcoin not understanding it, but if you really start to see the field, if you see the signal through the noise, you figure out that it's a better form of money that's going to store value over time. And part and parcel to that, if you want to buy some Bitcoin, is that you have to figure out how you're going to secure it. And you're going to figure out whether you should have a cold stored wallet or whether you want to work with a custodian or whether you want to work with a company like Unchained, which I helped build. But if you recognize why Bitcoin will store value, then the safekeeping of that becomes of paramount importance. And so you think long and hard. The other beautiful thing about Bitcoin is that there's no moral hazard. Everyone has to make decisions for their own, and there's no take backs. If you decide to secure Bitcoin the wrong way and you lose yours, it doesn't impact anybody else who secured their Bitcoin well. There are no bailouts in that world. Well, if you've already figured out how you want to custody Bitcoin, if we are focused at Zaprite on the payments experience, it's not our job, or I would say it's counterproductive to our job, to dictate to you how you should custody your Bitcoin. Namely, that you shouldn't have to change how you custody your Bitcoin in order to receive Bitcoin as payment. The analog would be you have to change your bank in order to accept dollars as revenue, which is not, I don't want to say it's nonsensical, it's just not logical. And so the kind of core of Zaprite is we are focused on enabling businesses to accept Bitcoin payments. In our view, to do that, we have to build the right product and we have to make it dead simple. And then what right product means is we have to meet people, because we're really building this for people who have already started to understand why Bitcoin will store value, and they're graduating in this logical extension to that point of saying, well, if it's going to store value, it's going to store value for me as an individual. It's going to store value for me as a business. I should be thinking about receiving it in direct exchange for goods and services, because it is valuable to have that redundant rail as infrastructure. And this is the way the world is going. Well, easily connect. If that means you use a Bitcoin hardware wallet, great. Connect your Bitcoin hardware wallet to Zaprite. If that means you aren't prepared to do that and you want to have your Bitcoin go directly to a custodian like Strike, great. We meet you where you are. Zaprite never touches your funds. We focus on a seamless payments experience, which is bringing your ways to custody Bitcoin into that rather than having to replicate it. Then what that allows us to do is focus exclusively on the payments experience, because you've already figured out how you want to store your Bitcoin, and that's great for us. And then the second key column, which we think is core to this idea of making it very easy for people to make the decision that they want to accept Bitcoin payments, is giving them easy access to their existing fiat rails. That you lower the bar, you make it easier for businesses to make that decision and say, yes, I want to give my customers an option to pay me in Bitcoin, if you don't have to change their existing financial operations on the fiat side. So also with Zaprite, yes, you bring all of your Bitcoin wallets, custodial, non-custodial, Lightning, and on-chain, but then you can connect things like Stripe and Square. And so we create this one integrated Bitcoin payment checkout that has both Bitcoin and fiat. And that really is meeting businesses where they are. They want to accept Bitcoin as payment, but we still do live in a fiat world, and they need to not have a second operation or a second flow just to receive Bitcoin. And so that's really what we're focusing on delivering to them, and based on the customer feedback that we're getting and just the growth that we're seeing, we believe that that we're delivering the product that the market needs. And that's also how we think about it. We're not here to compete with existing other companies working on Bitcoin payments. We're very supportive of those other ways. We view it as we're all working on the same larger mission. We're all out there building and taking different approaches. We have our own unique approach. But the goal is to enable 10x, 100x, 1000x the number of businesses that accept Bitcoin as payment, and they need the right tools in order to do that. In this case, people have to actually build the real rails in order for businesses to be turned up.
Okay, so yeah, that optionality I think is key. So you're essentially providing software tools for, and tell me if this is a fair way to describe what I'm hearing as your target market, someone who has already as an individual or business taken the conscious decision that a better form of money in one way or another is good for their business. So instead of receiving dollars or whatever local currency that may be and then converting to Bitcoin, why not just accept Bitcoin directly through the software tools that Zapright facilitates? Is that fair?
That's fair. Yeah. And we also, you know, I think the approach that we take is we're building this platform for people that actually want the Bitcoin. Now we make it easy for them. We're realists. We run a business. We're individuals. We operate in the marketplace. And so we know that businesses need fiat, but the product itself we're building for the people that are accumulating Bitcoin, which comes with, you need solutions that allow you to interface with the fiat world and you can convert Bitcoin and fiat. We just don't do that directly. We connect you directly to partners like Strike, like Ibex, more to come that can. And that allows us to focus all of our energy on the payments experience, on how you interface with your customers or how our customers interface with their customers in terms of actually receiving money in return for goods and services. And so very much it's an endeavor to be hyper specialized to improve that experience to ultimately enable their businesses and fuel growth within their businesses.
You know, I have to say, I used Zapright when I was in Austin. I bought your book and we used the Zapright platform. And the experience was fantastic. It was faster than any credit card terminal. It was seamless and you could choose. I paid in Bitcoin, I think on Lightning, but it's like as a client, you know, if I'm checking out, it must be very onerous for a business to say, do you want to pay me in Bitcoin or credit card? And then you have to change your platform. But with Zapright, you had all those options on one platform. And it's immediate and easy to use. So, I mean, that zap that comes at the end when the transaction is finalized is such a great touch. And you know, from a user experience, you're never going to get a business onboarded if the user who's buying the good or service doesn't have a pleasant experience. So from that perspective, I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, and that really is core to how we think about it, which is we're enabling the business by creating a great payment experience where when they decide that they want to accept Bitcoin as payment, again, we are realists. We understand that every business needs to continue to accept fiat. The customers that we cater to are people that are down the Bitcoin curve that already understand it to a sufficient degree to understand why they would want to accept it as payment. But they can expose this to an option as an option to their customers in such a way where I have some cross section of my customers that don't know what Bitcoin is and don't want to pay me in Bitcoin. And then I have customers that I want to cater to that do. And rather than having to have a conversation or a diverted, you know, dual financial operation and checkout flow, it's just I can present one option to them that says, whoever you are, I'm open for business. And then that also is the greatest way for them to market and expose to their customers that they are willing to accept Bitcoin by saying, hey, if I'm a payer like you, Lynn, buying my book, you have Bitcoin. That's great. Pay me in Bitcoin. But if somebody else comes through and they want to learn about Bitcoin as they're buying my book, right there, it's just as easy to pay with Zapright with a credit card than it is buying anything else with a credit card. And that is really critical to putting businesses in a place where we've lowered the bar so that they can say, you know, there's many businesses that might have said, I want to accept Bitcoin payments, but it's not being delivered to me in the way that it needs to be for me to take that step with my business. I'll just continue to accept fiat and then convert it to Bitcoin on my balance sheet. So that's a problem that we're solving. But also one thing I wanted to mention is when we talk about how we're catering to the universe of people that already understand Bitcoin, we're doing that because they are the most logical people to actually say, pay me in Bitcoin. That if you do not understand why Bitcoin stores value, it is very illogical for you to invest in infrastructure to give the option and to say, pay me in Bitcoin. But that doesn't mean that you have to be technical to accept Bitcoin payments. We work with people who range from Bitcoin is their business, they're Bitcoin developers, and they use our invoicing platform because they offer contract services to companies that are building applications on Bitcoin. But then we have 60 to 70 year olds who are dentists on our platform, that your ability to understand or your level of understanding is not tied to a technical capacity. The thing that we make it easy to do is for all of those range of people to accept Bitcoin payments. And that's part and parcel to meeting them where they are. Not ready to hold their own keys, but understand why Bitcoin will store value, or they hold their own keys, they might run their own Lightning node. Our goal is to aggregate all the ways to be able to receive payment, meeting everyone that could be, now we are opinionated about what are good ways and what are the common ways of those people who will, who are a universe of customers. But the point is, you do not have to be technical to accept Bitcoin as payment. And that is also a goal of ours to be able to address the technical and non-technical crowds.
And are there any metrics you can share with us, Parker, as far as, the early adoption for Zaprite, as far as, geography, where are the customers coming from, what types of businesses, any other profiles that you can share?
Yeah, so I'll share a few. We are still very early. I'd say we've been offering subscription services since November, so just under 6 months. I think in March, we had over 700,000 in monthly payments facilitated. So in the grand scheme, someone would look at that and say, hey, that's a small number in the grand scheme, but it was 200,000 in December, and we really launched our subscription service in November. And payments are growing both on count and volumes, 25% to 50% month on month. And our customers are typically in the U.S. We can see that because the mix. We also enable Rails to accept euros and other fiat currencies, but practically speaking, the vast majority of our customers today, and also just we're a company with limited resources, how we're marketing and targeting is we're seeing customers that have dual checkouts with specifically Bitcoin and dollars on the fiat side. But the other great thing about Zaprite is that because we never touch customers' money, we don't touch, even though we enable Bitcoin payments, both on-chain and Lightning, and we enable fiat payments, we never touch customer funds. So we are not a payment processor. We are more a facilitator, and we're a facilitator that never comes in contact with the actual customer funds, which makes us not a money transmitter. And so right now, today, and we do have customers all over the world that have used Zaprite, do use Zaprite. It's just the majority of the volume today is still in the US.
And can you just take a step back and just talk about the monetization? So it's a software as a service model, and you charge a monthly fee regardless of the volume that's being transacted by a client, or is it a scaling model?
So mostly because we launched our subscription service and paid in a paid way in November, so 5 months ago. One of the things that we both recognized and prioritized was, and this was part when we were really coalescing, Lynn, you'd mentioned that Zaprite had been around for about a year. John McGill, the founder and CEO, was somebody that both Will Cole, who joined Zaprite at the same time as I did, we had known from being in Austin, being at BitDevs, and that a priority for ours was that, and for the first year of Zaprite's existence, it had been exclusively invoices. We kind of aligned behind the future vision, kind of to understand where John was at, where he wanted to take it. It aligned and overlapped, mapped perfectly to our own, which was expanding from invoices to e-commerce as a next vertical, which we thought was critical to attacking the market with those two at the same time, because they're so complementary to each other. both from a client type as well as from a development infrastructure perspective. But one of the things was we had a priority of before we were out selling anything, if you know, I'm principally running business and sales and growth at Zaprite, was that we needed a way to charge for Zaprite. If we were going to be enabling businesses to accept Bitcoin as payment, we ourselves needed to deliver a very easy way for people to pay us. Well, if you are building a startup in anything else other than Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is not relevant to you yet because you don't understand Bitcoin, there is any amount of or range of fintech platforms out there in the fiat world that have been developed over the last 10 to 20 years that you can easily plug into for billing purposes. You do not have to be your own billing company in the fiat world. If ignorance is bliss and you don't understand that the world is shifting to Bitcoin. Well, if you're building a Bitcoin startup that's enabling Bitcoin payments, you also, and we had to, and it was a core piece of what we had to build before we could take to market, was our own billing infrastructure. We made, and Lynn, you mentioned it, but I'm explaining the rationale. We made a simplifying assumption for a very strategic reason, which was we couldn't be the best Bitcoin payments company and the best build an internal billing system at the same time. So we created a simplified assumption that was, we're going to offer this as a fixed SaaS service. We're going to create a great payments experience around that subscription, but we'll do two things with that. We'll allow customers that are probably too small, that aren't going to be receiving enough Bitcoin payments to justify our direct kind of time and energy to essentially filter out. And we will gladly and readily allow our customers, as they're facilitating more payments through Zaprite, to get greater leverage out of that because they are our early customers. Over time, as we deliver more value through the software, we plan to monetize in greater ways and to grow with our customers. Some of it will be feature driven. Some of it might be API driven in terms of number of transactions that were facilitated. But we really made that simplified assumption with the recognition we can't be two things at once. We can't be our own hyper tailored billing platform and end product market selling to customers. And so, yes, right now, today, it's sold as a SaaS service. It's a fixed fee per month with a discount if people pay annually. And then over time, as we grow and we become more sophisticated on the billing service, we'll provide more solutions for either somebody who is, you know, kind of starting with a very small base that might not be willing to pay for $25, or more realistically focusing upmarket to say, hey, as we're enabling, you know, customers that are doing millions of Bitcoin transactions per month, and they're getting more value out of Zaprite, how do we monetize that better? But right now, we're just trying to demonstrate that there is a large and growing market of people that are willing to accept Bitcoin as payment, and that there's customers on the other side paying them, and that they're using Zaprite. And so first and foremost, getting that critical mass of minimum threshold businesses on board. And that's how we set on the pricing model.
And Parker, so in these first 6 months or so since you've launched the subscription model, what feedback are you getting from customers, and are you how are you feeding that into your product roadmap?
One of the great things about Zaprite is that because we're building the product for people that actually want the Bitcoin, which also recognizes that people still need fiat, but I think that is this guiding North Star that can be missed, where people might build an application to, you know, enable Bitcoin to then get into fiat. By starting with the North Star of, we are developing the product for the businesses that are Bitcoin minded, helping them get Bitcoin most efficiently as possible, that our customers are active stakeholders. And then the other side of putting a price tag, which we've had a number of people come through and say, hey, I'd really like to use Zaprite, but I only issue one invoice and this is too high for me. And we say, hey, look, we'll like to support you in the future, but you're not our target customer today. That when we have this minimum threshold, then the feedback that we're getting, if it's from a paying customer, And we're not just, you know, we have our own rationale to say, okay, we have a vision on the product side, but basically we get active feedback from customers and we iterate and deploy software and product very quickly. So I think like on the big guiding decisions, that's mostly formed around our own vision of the future of Bitcoin payments. But then in terms of a feature perspective of augmenting the product, like augmenting the invoices, augmenting our payment links or developing a way that we're going to go into another e-commerce platform, those are prioritized based on the actual feedback that we're hearing for customers. So the guiding lights of we're going to be a payment gateway that doesn't cause you to change how you custody your Bitcoin. We're going to meet you where you are. And that core to accepting Bitcoin payments as a business is connecting the fiat rails in there side by side. Those are the big things that we kind of are looking out as saying, this is the highest level way that this type of product needs to be delivered to convert businesses reliably. And then at those lower levels is where we get the active feedback from customers that say, hey, I really love this. I'm a customer all day, every day. If you could add this one or two things, it's really going to help my workflow as a business. Those are the things that we then prioritize and being a small team, but also one of the great things, and I'll always compliment John and our lead developer who were before us, was they built a great foundation that then allows us to ship product quickly.
So speaking of your team, tell us a little bit about your team, and are there room? I mean, some of the people I'm sure listening to the podcast are looking at ways to enter into the Bitcoin space. Is there any specific talent that you're looking for to join the team, or how do you think about the growth of Zaprite?
Well, first I might say that, you know, I think a lot of people, as they start to get engaged in Bitcoin, they do have that natural inclination of, hey, can I work on Bitcoin full time? And I mean, I've done that. I support it. It's been the most rewarding thing of my life. The other side of that, though, is that, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be one or the other. And so, you know, now, and not just because I'm, you know, helping develop software to help business accept Bitcoin, is there's the real world of commerce. Those are the things that people need in their everyday lives, that a great way to contribute to Bitcoin is figuring out how to incorporate Bitcoin into existing businesses. So, you know, first message being, don't feel like you have to go work for a Bitcoin company to contribute resources, either in incorporating Bitcoin in, and because you are doing a real service to Bitcoin. If, you know, we have a local rancher that accepts Bitcoin as payment, you know, he's always going to be best at being a rancher. You know, if he figured out Bitcoin and then said, you know, I'm going to go work on Bitcoin software development, not the best way for him to accumulate Bitcoin or to maximize value. So just want to say that from the start. But then more directly to your question, our team is small. We're really focused on getting to profitability, or at least having a very clear trajectory to that. And so there's just a team of five of us currently. And we feel like we can scale and leverage everything that we have here to get us close to there, which we hope to be at this year, which might be a little bit of a stretch goal. But so the short answer is we're not hiring anyone now. We are going to have a lot of needs, but our first goal is to get within a stone's throw of profitability, or be on that very clear trajectory, and be willing to grow organically as this market grows, to not set outsized expectation of it. It's like, we know where the world's going. We know we have something special based on the feedback that we're hearing from customers. The best feedback that we get, there are examples of stores online, but then also just testimonials that customers have given very organically, where they express the value proposition better than I ever could. And that is worth its weight in gold, or, you know, now in Bitcoin. And so we're just going to kind of stay this course for now, but then probably in the second half of the year, start to look on to bringing on more team members. And then what I'd say more broadly is that when people are interested to get working full-time on Bitcoin, if they do want to go that route rather than incorporating Bitcoin into their existing businesses, is to figure out what aspect of the Bitcoin ecosystem most interests them. You know, working on the custody problem was something that is still a large problem. Now, the platforms are way better today than they were 5 or 6 years ago, but there's an entire world of people that we need to onboard to those solutions. So there's a large piece of that problem, the, you know, building hardware within the custody space. I generally try to simplify it. You can either, you know, if Bitcoin's muddy, you need to custody it. Bitcoin, there's a security apparatus, the mining ecosystem. If you're an energy professional, that might be the area for you. Or if you have payments expertise, you know, certainly reach out to us, because while we're perfectly happy to and inclined to grow this organically, and we feel like we have a lot of operating leverage as we are, even though we're a small team, that we do need, you know, people that have expertise and resources. And so we also feel like we have a lot of flexibility, such that if we could bring somebody on, it's just we don't have an immediate plan to do that.
Oh, amazing. I mean, it sounds like you guys are running very lean, focused, and patient business, which is quite admirable, Parker. So, I mean, we'll be quite excited to see how the company grows over the course of the year. And to that point, is there any fundraising currently that you're looking at? How are you thinking about investment for an early stage company like yours? Where's your head at with regards to financing?
Yeah, so we have most of our balance sheet in Bitcoin, which we're pretty comfortable with, and that, yeah, there's a few different scenarios. Often, you know, realistically, dependent on the rate of growth that we have over the next 6 months. As it stands now, we likely will raise a small amount of capital sometime in the second half of the year. That really is dependent on our trajectory, because what we're committed to do as kind of a founding group, for lack of a better term, is that one of the beautiful things about Bitcoin is that once you start saving in Bitcoin, and if you saved in Bitcoin for a long period of time, you can, one, work on the things that you want to work on without needing to take a large salary, which is a nice thing. But then, two, you also have the means to fund your own businesses. And so we're in a position where, you know, kind of we are very committed to this path of the company. We're also in a position, we have a very low burn, and we can fund it, you know, from our own savings. But that being said, we do, and we're committed to that path, or really what we're focused on is creating maximum flexibility for the platform, and wanting to not, you know, have to raise a bunch of money and then feel like we have to chase growth based on a story that we told some people. But at the same time, if we achieve the trajectory that we're seeing right now, and we do that for a couple more months, that we will likely will raise a small amount of money in the second half of the year, particularly to bring people in that can help accelerate us. And I think that is one thing that I think all Bitcoin companies and all people that are minded in the Bitcoin space, there used to be a day, and again, I say this as a non-expert, but I can see how the world morphed as the fiat tech world morphed, was that there was a period in time when venture capitalists actually delivered value to companies that were building. And then they all started saying that, you know, we help you do all of these things on an accelerated basis. We help lower your execution risk. We help create value for you beyond just the money. Mm-hmm. And then that pitch, but really more its function, became commoditized. And that the companies, and I'm speaking more to the Silicon Valley fiat venture capitalists, that it really stopped being true. In terms of, it really was just a check. And then they would put lipstick on a pig to tell you a story. And realistically, most of the founders didn't even care about whether they could create value, because they wanted the money, because doing the next round was a sign of success. And I know that's not the case in all of them, but I preface that to say that there are limitations that we have a vision around Bitcoin payments. We have high degrees of conviction in that. The ways that we're seeing our customers be enabled and then the feedback that they're providing is reinforcing that both we have a high performant platform and the way that we're developing the product is the right product and it is dead simple to the point that we're enabling people that otherwise wouldn't onboard to Bitcoin payments. At that same time, we do have limitations in terms of our understanding of how the fiat payment system works, our connectivity to like actual payment processing in terms of potential real needs to put a hold on some funds to say, hey, if you're doing permissionless payments, that might not work in all commerce use cases. That businesses themselves might want that to agree. They might want the balance of power to not be what it is today where anybody can file a chargeback and then money stripped out of their account. But basically saying there's real skill sets and there's real strategic people that can add value to ZapRite. And so the investors that we want to bring in we're going to be hyper focused on truly that. Mm-hmm. We're not just taking capital to take money in because we can fund this ourselves. We need to bring in partners that we genuinely like and that will genuinely help us move ZapRite forward. And being able to be in a position to have that flexibility to fund it itself is critical to then being able to have a higher degree of just sitting down with people that we genuinely like and that also not necessarily can make a case to us, but that we can also go out to and be like, hey, we need these skill sets from an investor group to help us, really, go from, growing 25 to 50% a month to doubling each month, things like that.
Yeah. I love hearing you say that because as VC was my most recent career in industry and I just am saddened to see how it just changed in recent years. And it just seems to be chasing growth at any cost. And especially the tokenization model that seemed to take, to really kind of fall off the rails in the last few years. But, I see Bitcoin companies are thinking differently because they do think about solid growth. And I think it's the whole time preference that you tend to, really become part of your nature in Bitcoin. And there are a handful of VCs that have that same approach. And we'll be featuring some of those on Build with Bitcoin too, but only the VCs, to your point, that are really strategic partners with a company that understand a long-term vision and kind of go back to the founding values of venture capital, understanding it's a long-term play, understanding what the vision of the company is and really helping those founders execute on that vision and achieve it in a proper way.
Yeah. And I do think that shift is happening more broadly within the Bitcoin ecosystem among founders, where it is one very important to have people inside the tent or potentially on a board that see Bitcoin the same way that you do. Because otherwise it is not swimming in parallel. It is directly swimming upstream. And that is one side of it, which is okay, there's a real cost to me to not having investors that are fully aligned. And it's very difficult to be fully aligned if you do not share an understanding of the world of Bitcoin and what it represents and how it works. And then the consequences of that. And then the other side of it is, okay, now how can these individuals help in a tangible way beyond giving me money to allocate to have some expertise or have relationships that can allow my business to take a step function that would be otherwise difficult for me to take on my own. And so, or us on our own, not me personally, but thinking about whatever company you're running. And so I don't think that is unique to ZapRite. I think that more people within the Bitcoin ecosystem that are building are starting to think that way of we're not prioritizing path to profitability so that we can go get investor funds. We want to have maximal optionality and flexibility, and we want to earn Bitcoin. And that the thing that is the greatest signal that what we're building is actually valued and that what we're spending our time on is the correct thing to be doing that is having a market signal that says that your actual customers are the ones that are paying you rather than the venture firms. And so, it's not unique to us, but I have seen a shift amongst, you know, other of my peers and friends who are building other platforms, you know, similarly in the space.
Yeah, that's amazing, Parker. And I think we can all agree it's a healthy shift. Maybe taking a step back, Parker, I mean, why now? Do you think the technology is ready? I mean, we hear a lot about how we're still in the early days. We're going through some sort of curve of or transition from store of value to what you're mentioning, medium of exchange, just direct trade. There's lots of work being done about how Bitcoin scales. But again, back to the question, why now? Do you think Bitcoin, the technology, is ready to be used as a direct payment rail? What are your thoughts around that? And I guess what's the motivation for going into full gear on the payment side right now?
So I'm typically long-winded. I'll shorten this one. Is like, yes, the answer is yes. And the motivation is there's a sufficient number of entrepreneurs that understand Bitcoin, and there will only be more from here. And the fiat system is increasingly fragile. And so when you pair those two things, the system works, and there's a sufficient critical mass of people that both want to take into their own hands their destiny and saying like, okay, I get why this other system's a risk. I'm willing to invest in that infrastructure. My other view of the world is that, you know, look out and see what's happening. Right. And so when I think about our own platform, there's five of us and we help facilitate nearly or just over 700,000 of commerce. And the other side of that is I did not get I got one customer ticket about a payment failing. So, and that was because a non-custodial Lightning node went down. But that's a pretty good hit rate too. And so I think that the more that people, and the best way to experience this is buy something in Bitcoin. You know, Lynn explained it that, you know, it's actually a better payment experience. And if you don't know what Bitcoin is, it's not because you don't have Bitcoin. You've never interacted with a Bitcoin wallet. But if you do, it works flawlessly. It works better than the fiat system.
Just an aside, it's like from a business standpoint, I still can't believe more businesses don't understand this, that the immediate settlement of it. So as opposed to a credit card where you have that long timeline of you don't know someone's going to do a chargeback, you know, at some future point, when you settle in Bitcoin for a small business, it's a beautiful thing because then you're assured of that revenue at that moment. So I think the more that becomes aware.
No, sorry. So to that point, Lynn, so you let's say I do want to accept Bitcoin as a form of payment instead of going first through the dollar. I've heard you say in other interviews, Parker, that if you were to go from Bitcoin to dollars, you know, maybe I'm accepting credit cards to Lynn's point. And then from there, use those company revenues to buy some Bitcoin. I'm maybe incurring in a 5%, I believe you've mentioned, additional cost as opposed to just directly accepting Bitcoin. Can you break that down for us? I mean, is that credit card fees? Is that exchange fees? Where does that additional cost come from?
Yeah, so I would say let's just break that down where your credit card fee if you're using a standard processor, and if you found a processor that there's some massive arbitrage, please let me know. But most credit card fees are 3% plus a fixed fee. Okay. So if you're selling a good for between $10 and $50, that fee works out to 3 to 3.5%, maybe as high as 4% if you're going lower because there's a fixed component of it. But let's say it's 3 to 4%. Then let's say that that the only other cost is if you want the Bitcoin, the exchange fee. So that is anywhere from 0.5% to 1%, unless you're buying in really large volumes, like over $1 million. But realistically, 0.5% to 1%. And so if you think about that, then that right there gets you, depending on the scenario that you're looking at, 3.5% to 5%. Okay. And in most cases, between 4% and 5%. Then if you think about the other costs, the more hidden costs, so that I think explains in a very linear way, like these are hard costs. It's on average going to cost you 4% to 5% if you actually want the Bitcoin. There are all sorts of hidden costs. You mentioned chargeback. I was onboarding a customer yesterday to ZapRite, or kind of in the process of onboarding, that specifically mentioned, you know, having a $10,000 to $20,000 chargeback. Where, okay, the money's just gone. I've already delivered the service. I don't even know which customer yet it's associated with, and now I'm gonna have to hire an attorney. So that's a hidden cost. But a different cost that can be quantified is if you look at, and again, it won't always be the case. It is this way because people are adopting Bitcoin for the first time and very few people own Bitcoin, and everyone's going to have to own it. Bitcoin appreciates on a daily basis over time by somewhere between 0.5% and 1% a day. And so if you're accepting fiat, and then having to wait for the hold period to get your dollars, and then having to then wait to get them fully settled to then buy Bitcoin with an exchange, you're constantly, let's just say this, rather than I'm going to quantify that for you, you are constantly exposed to the debasement of fiat on about a 2-week basis, if you're lucky in the fiat system. Maybe some are better, but most people have holds, or to get money through the fiat system and then back out, it's going to be at least a week. So you just constantly, you know, would be taking that leakage of fiat inflation. So it easily adds up to 4% to 5%, but realistically is larger. And then what is resonating with most people though too is that if you get why your currency is a risk, then you start to understand why the rails are a risk. And that if you're a business owner, if you're an entrepreneur and running a business is difficult, and there's a scenario where someone could just take the money out of your account, or you could get debanked, or your bank could go out of business, which I'm not a conspiracy theorist here. Like if people aren't seeing these things happen more frequently, and any business is dealing with chargebacks, that having that second rail as it's an investment that's de-risking your business. So many people, you know, when they first get into Bitcoin, they can't not look at it as an investment or as an investment asset. As they start to really see it, they recognize it as money, they see it as storing purchasing power, they understand why it does. Similarly, when people first think about accepting Bitcoin as payment, they think about our fee as what's the percentage, you know, and then how much am I saving? If ZapRite costs $240 a year, and we're over time, we'll deliver more value and charge more to customers as we go up market. But just taking today, then if they're doing $24,000 in Bitcoin sales, it's about 1%. There's 1%. So then they might be thinking, well, it's 4% to 5% and ZapRite costs 1%. I'm saving 3% to 4%. But as they start to see the side of Bitcoin payments more clearly, they realize this is an investment in my business. I am setting up a second rail to access the Bitcoin network that has far fewer single points of failure than the fiat system, and that over the long term is much more stable, put your price on that. Because it's like those old MasterCard commercials, you know, cost of this, X percent, cost of that, Y percent. Having a dual rail, redundancy that de-risks your business from the fiat system, priceless. You know, it becomes priceless. It becomes critical.
That's a really powerful thought that I just want to emphasize. It's like, it's not, you know, people tend to think of Bitcoin as risky, but it's really de-risking your business to have that second platform. And you talked about it earlier in our conversation about Silicon Valley Bank failing. I had many of the startups that I work with that banked there, and they were absolutely in panic that weekend because their entire banking relationship was pulled from them. And so by having this other foundational payment rail, I mean, you're really de-risking and protecting your business. That's great stuff. Parker, we really appreciate your time so much. It's probably time to put a wrap on this conversation, but we can't tell you how much it means to us to have you as one of our early guests with your thought leadership, your experience in startups and Bitcoin, your knowledge, sharing all this. And we will add in our show notes, like a link to the talk that you mentioned about Bitcoin is not a hedge, along with where to buy your book, which I'd highly recommend. And any other final comments or thoughts or where people can find you to close us out?
Well, one, I want to thank you guys for having me on. It is an honor. I look forward to seeing you both at BitBlock Boom in Texas next week. And yeah, if you can just include a link to where to buy the book on the safehouse.com, Safe Dean's website. And then check us out at Zaprite, Zaprite.com. And other than that, they can find me on Twitter. Parker A. Lewis is where people can follow me personally. But yeah, my message would be, if you don't understand Bitcoin, go buy my book and it'll help you accelerate the path to seeing Bitcoin as money and why it's replacing all other money. And that if you're someone who already sees that or understands that, then you and your business should, if you're a business owner, should be thinking about Bitcoin payments in a much more strategic way and probably with greater urgency.
Well, thank you for the time, Parker, and congratulations on everything you're doing.
Appreciate you guys.
Please be sure to share, write us a review, or give us a follow if you found this useful. We also include some contact information and links in the show notes. Thank you.